I was saying earlier in the show, Jason Lacanfora, that I think it was last week, you were the first guy that I stumbled across on social media that had the official, expect Andrew Luck not to play today. He is out. What are your sources telling you about Luck today? Because it is game day and there seems to be nothing definitive.
Yeah, it's still very early, obviously, in the day. And they'll have him over to the stadium and work him out probably 3 hours or so before the game, and we'll get definitive word then. We may hear a little bit more before that. They did re-sign Josh Johnson as a backup emergency quarterback, but that was also because Hasselbeck's been sick, and actually Hasselbeck did less at practice yesterday than Andrew Luck, I'm told. You know, Luck's thrown a little bit more each day. Their hope Sunday when they decided not to dress Andrew was that they would have him for Thursday, although there was no guarantees. And, you know, I was told things are still trending in that direction. But we'll have to see. You know, this is the franchise. If he wakes up this morning and that shoulder is locked up, or, you know, the range of motion is getting more limited, or there's, you know, something going on there, then they're going to err on the side of caution. So we'll have to wait and see. I think he's going to play based on what I've heard to this point, but we just, you know, it's still inconclusive. It's going to come down to what's going on when he gets to the stadium today.
And on the other side, have they installed Hoyer back in as the starter? What's going on there? It's hard to keep track.
With Mallett, I don't know why, other than it almost seems like hubris on the part of Bill O'Brien, the head coach, who, you know, yanked Hoyer two and a half quarters into the season. And then Mallett played really well in garbage time, so then he stuck with Mallett. But Mallett's been a failure. The offense has been a failure, particularly in the first half of games. The only thing that they have done on offense the last 2 weeks is once they've fallen behind in games. So then he brings in Hoyer last week. Hoyer does awesome in garbage time, not that it matters. You know, gets it from 42-0 almost to 42-28. And now he says he's sticking with Mallett because it's a short week, which is a little disingenuous because Hoyer, it's not like Hoyer hasn't had reps in the system. Hoyer was in this system in New England with Bill O'Brien, and Hoyer got the bulk of the reps in the preseason, and Hoyer obviously started week one. So I don't know what's going on there, but nothing good, that's for sure.
Jason, you were bullish on the Texans here.
Yeah, I thought they had some talent. The two teams that I really swung and missed on, and I kind of bought the hype train on both, were Houston and Miami. You know, I thought one of those two could be in the playoffs in the AFC as a wild card, and they're not going to get close. And Houston's schedule, I mean, they play a joke schedule. They don't play anybody, but they can't beat anybody. So what's the difference? You know, what does it matter? You know, they really should not have a win. The one game they won against Tampa, Tampa's kicker missed 3 field goals and an extra point in the second half of that game. And it was a one-score game pretty much most of the day. So they've shown me nothing. And defensively, it's amazing. If it wasn't for Chip Kelly and Joe Philbin and, you know, Sean Payton and some of these guys catching a lot of heat, you'd hear a whole lot more about Bill O'Brien and what's going on there, because it's nothing good.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt, you're not going to hear any MVP talk for J.J. Watt this year. You know, he's not making quite as many splash plays. They never have a lead, so they can't tee off on other people. It's been a disaster.
And in fairness, you weren't alone. There were a lot of people that felt this was going to be a big year for the Miami Dolphins. They've now already fired Joe Philbin, as you mentioned. And I love reading the stuff that's happening. Could it get any worse, right? More and more controversy. What was Ryan Tannehill got into it with a practice roster player, said, hey, enjoy your practice roster trophy, and started ripping one of his own teammates. He's kind of tried to soften that. But this isn't getting better in Miami, is it?
No. Look, there's been the inmates run the asylum there. You know, look, Miami's been a place for a while now where, you know, the owner's not in the building. He's in New York. He doesn't really come down hard on anybody. Any given day, depending on which way the wind blows, you know, it could be the business side of the operation who's really in charge that day. Maybe it's football operations. Some days nobody really knows. You've got a coach who's a bit of a pushover, a nice guy, but nice to a fault. And you've got an absentee owner who's loyal to a fault to that really nice guy head coach. And there's no authority figure around anywhere. So you go there for the money and you go there for South Beach. And if you go 8-8, everybody's kind of like okay with that. And, you know, it's a very comfortable environment. And now they got, you know, I don't know if you saw any of Dan Campbell's press conference. He's clearly trying to rail against that. But it's tough when you're a tight ends coach who was a coaching intern 3 or 4 years ago. You know, I'm supposed to believe now that Dan Campbell, because of some Oklahoma drills, is going to get Ndamukong Suh to play up to his contract. I don't think it works that way, but you know, we're going to find out. But yeah, it's a total disaster there. You know, and I thought there would be a buy-in, and I thought that guys would rally, and you know, I thought that because the way the schedule's set up, that's another one. They don't play any. The amazing thing about their start is they haven't played a quarterback yet. You know, like they lost to Blake Bortles, they lost to Fitzpatrick. They should have lost to Cousins week one. I mean, they haven't really played anybody yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tyrod Taylor on the road, they got Tyrod Taylor at home, and the Bills utterly controlled that game from the first snap to the last. So, I mean, it's been a disaster. I thought that they could I thought they'd be a team that got better through the year and that could start quickly because they didn't play any quarterbacks early. And I thought they'd have one of the better D-lines in the game. I mean, they've got one sack collectively. That's inexcusable through a quarter of the season for any team, much less one that's got Olivier Vernon and Earl Mitchell and Ndamukong Suh and Cameron Wake on their D-line.
Another team that's disappointed in Kansas City, and I understand they're missing a lot of guys in the secondary, but this was supposed to be a ferocious pass rush and a team that made the playoffs a couple times recently, a solid run game. What's happened to them?
You know, they still cannot get the ball downfield at all. I mean, yeah, they finally got a wide receiver touchdown, but, you know, Alex Smith has kind of hit the wall. He is who he is, and he'll be a bridge quarterback, and he'll get you from, you know, really rocky terrain to solid terrain, but he's not going to keep getting you up that mountain. He's not going to keep elevating your team. And once the expectations aren't, it's not good enough just to kind of win 9-10 games and squeak into the playoffs when you've kind of done that once or twice, it's very difficult then to make that next leap with him. And they've got fundamental problems as well. They have the same problems, really, as Miami. Neither team can get the ball downfield. Neither team has a quarterback who really wants to get the ball downfield. They're not explosive at all. The hope is that you dink it off to Jarvis Landry in Miami or to Jamaal Charles in Kansas City for 5-6 yards, and you hope he runs it for another 30. You don't have to defend the deep game against them. Neither team can stop the run. Now, they got these edge rushers, but if you can't stop the run and the other team's not throwing that often against you and you can't run the ball and you can't stop the run, so you don't ever have yourself in a situation where you're getting a lot of sacks because you're chasing the game and you're throwing more than you want to. It's just the whole formula there is warped. And I don't know, chicken or the egg. What do you have to start running the ball first? Do you have to start stopping the run first? Do you have to just, I don't know what it is, but when Tom Bahali and Justin Houston are playing the run 65% of the time, 70% of the time, they're not going to get, by default, they're not going to be attacking the other team's quarterback. They're not going to be making as many game-changing plays. The sample size won't be as big. But the equation there is warped, and really that both teams are completely undermined by a lack of any semblance of decent offensive line play. And that's suffocating their seasons.
Jason Lackenfor is our NFL insider here on Boomer and Warner in the Morning. The Seattle Seahawks, we know they're going to win their home games. They almost lost it, maybe should have lost it. No Marshawn Lynch. The O-line is in somewhat tatters. Their quarterback is running for his life. This weekend they're at Cincy, who's been very good. What are we seeing with Seattle? Is this just the rough start now Chancellor's back, or is there greater warts on this thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot like last year. They can't find their offensive identity. The offensive line is worse than a year ago. And there's a lot of experimentation going on there with some converted defensive linemen. There could be a change at center coming for them, if not before this game, then certainly during it, if the snaps and the exchanges aren't better. It's bad enough they don't have a lot of individual offensive talent on the offensive line. But when your quarterback is already losing a quarter of a second, a half a second, three quarters of a second from having to adjust to a bad snap all the time, that's a luxury they really can't afford, given, you know, how bad that unit is already to begin with. You know, Lynch could play this weekend. We'll have to see how that goes. But, defensively, they've they're back to being who they are, and that's where it all starts with them. I do think they'll be able to run the ball as the year goes on, and really we've seen at times Marshawn be Marshawn. We've seen this kid Rawls have himself a game, and I thought Fred Jackson was on his way to a big game last week before his leg got rolled up on. So, you know, I don't think it's dire. They went through transition last year when they couldn't figure out how to use Percy Harvin. They're kind of doing that right now with Jimmy Graham. But I think the real lesson there is going to be, as long as Daryl Bevel, their coordinator, is calling that offense, you know, the defense will lead them. And they're not going to get all that cute. And they're not going to scheme all that hard to get one guy the ball in fortuitous situations the way, like if you look at an Atlanta with Julio Jones and the way Kelce, you watch them at all, Kyle Shanahan, their coordinator, will move. He'll move Julio Jones on every snap. He'll be in the slot on the left, slot on the right, out wide on the left, out wide on the right, as a back in the I formation. You know, with trips on one side, isolated on the other side. That's not really what they're going to do for Jimmy Graham, because their bread and butter at the end of the day is just going to be running the football and hoping that guy can make a play here or there. He's not going to be force fed the ball. I just don't see that happening, given the way that offense operates, and frankly, given the way that offensive line's so bad, a lot of times it's going to be what can Russell do to keep the play going. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of style points. I think it might be a little bit herky-jerky for a while, but I think they're a good football team. We know they're a good football team, and I think they have the kind of secondary that can go into Cincinnati and handle them. You know, I think this is a team they're built to play. As great as the Bengals have looked on offense and as great as the Bengals have been at home, I think the Seahawks have a little chance to make a statement here.
I'm totally with you on Seattle. They don't seem interested in trying to get the ball to Jimmy Graham. Why did they make that trade? I mean, their offensive line is notably worse without Max Unger. Yeah. Now you have a guy that has been a Pro Bowler, and you can't get the ball to him beyond 10 yards down the field. I mean, this is a crazy trade, given what you said. Their coordinator doesn't really have any interest in doing anything sexy offensively.
Well, I think you could say from the other side, why did New Orleans do it as well? Because the center's not doing a whole heck of a lot for them, because they can't really run the ball. They have that offense used to flow, had someone to flow through. Now it doesn't. They haven't been nearly the same without Jimmy Graham. I mean, really, I think if you gave those guys truth serum, both those GMs, John Schneider and Mickey Loomis, would undo that trade now, even just this small period of time into it. I mean, I get why Seattle did it, because the thought was, well, if we have what we have, and now we've got this guy to just catch jump balls in the red zone, and just we finally have a freak of nature. Everybody talks about Russell Wilson's size. Well, you can't miss Jimmy Graham, you know, and just throw it up to him. And, you know, but that's not really who Russell ultimately is. He's going to try to protect the football. Not that he's obviously a playmaker, but, you know, and it's going to take some time, and it's a big adjustment, and maybe it does work. Maybe it does flourish down the road. We don't know, but the problem, too, is they really want to run the ball a lot, obviously, and they want to run the ball out of one tight end sets and two tight end sets, but Jimmy Graham's not a tight end. He's a wide receiver. So as an inline blocker, it's not going to happen. It's just not who he is. And other teams know if he's on the field in an obvious obvious running situation and you're attacking that play in the run game, your assumption is they're running away from Jimmy Graham. They're not going to run behind Jimmy Graham. The Saints never ran behind Jimmy Graham in New Orleans. So you've got a weak offensive line, the need now to bring extra people in to help the run game, but the one tight end who you want on the field 100% of the time isn't really a tight end. So, you know, are we going to use two blocking tight ends and then put Jimmy out wide as sort of isolate him? I mean, they can. I mean, and maybe that's the answer. But now you're taking other people off the field, you know. So now there's no Doug Baldwin in that situation. It's just the personnel packages get a little limited when the tight end's not really a tight end, and you are this sort of team that so desperately needs to run the football.
We got about a minute, Jason. I know that the fall meetings took place. Roger Goodell speaking. San Diego, Oakland, St. Louis, all looking at potential moves to L.A. Are we closer to a solution and answer here?
Well, we should be, and we probably are, but I was there yesterday, talked to a lot of people. No one knows what the equation is. No one knows whether it's Carson, California, or Inglewood, California. No one knows whether it's one team or two teams and how they'd be paired. They just know that they want to get this resolved. And there's three owners who badly want to leave their home markets right now, and if left to their own devices, would have already done so. So there's going to be a whole lot of back channel work, backdoor sort of meetings and caucusing and figuring out which owners are in which camp. And a lot of that's already going on, but it really needs to ramp up now. And, you know, by December, I would say the league's going to have to come out and say which one of these projects it prefers. And in January, the expectation is there'll be a vote. And trust me, if there's a vote, there'll be a move, because there's no way in hell that this league is going to, you know, bring all these owners in, have all the media sitting out there, bring it to a vote, and then come back out 5 hours later and say, boy, yeah, we couldn't get 24 votes for either, you know, for anything. So we're just going to stick as, you know, status quo for another year. That's not how these things happen. If it comes to a vote, it's because all the internal caucusing already lets them know, yeah, we've got enough. This, you know, it's time to do this.
A couple words or less. Is it one or two teams that makes more sense in L.A.?
It's ultimately two. The question is it two right away, or is one coming first and then the other one a couple years later?